Chapter 3. When I came to myself, I found I was sitting in total darkness. I had a great pain in my head. Both of my hands and feet were bound. Unfamiliar noises pounded on my eardrums. The roaring water of a huge mill dam, the thrashing of heavy spray against wood, and the thundering of sails. The whole world heaved up and rushed down as the ship rolled on the waves of the ocean. I was so sick and hurt in body, and so confused in my mind. It took a long time for me to realize that I was tied up in the belly of Captain Hoseason's ship. I began to think of how desperate my situation was. I had lived through many hardships when I was a young, but none of them compared to the hardships that I suffered on Captain Hoseason's ship. I had no idea of what day it was. I fell asleep several times. I finally woke up and saw a small man holding a lantern. He was looking down at me. "How are you?" he asked me. I answered with a sob, as my visitor felt the pulse in my wrist and my temples. When he was satisfied, he set about cleaning and dressing the wound on my head. "Cheer up, man. The world has given you a bad start, but you'll make it better. Have you had any meat?" he asked me cheerfully. I felt so sick that I couldn't eat. He gave me some brandy and water to drink before he left me in the dark, and I fell asleep again. The next time I woke up, I felt even worse. The captain came to see me with the small man. "You see for yourself, sir. He's got a high fever, no appetite, no light, and no food. You know what that means," the small man said. "I'm not a magician, Mr. Riak," the captain told the other man. "Then let me take care of him. You have a good head on your shoulders, so take this boy out of this hole and put him in the forecastle," Mr. Riak said firmly. "Here he is, and here he will stay," Captain Hoseason replied. "You have been paid to kidnap and murder this boy, but I have not. I am only paid to be the second in command on this brig. I will have nothing to do with this," Mr. Riak said through gritted teeth. "What kind of talk is that?" the captain shouted at Mr. Riak. "The only kind of talk it seems you understand," Mr. Riak said coolly. "Fine, put him wherever you please," Captain Hoseason huffed, and left the pit I had found myself in. I had been wrong about the captain being a friend to me, but Mr. Riak seemed that he was going to prove to be a valuable friend. Mr. Riak cut the bounds from my hands and feet, threw me over his shoulder, carried me to the forecastle, and laid me in a bunk with some sea blankets. It was a wonderful blessing to see daylight again and find myself in the society of men. The forecastle was a roomy place and filled with the berths for all the crew, some of which had men sleeping in and others were smoking in. The day was calm, the wind was fair, and the scuttle was open, so the sunlight streamed into the forecastle. It was a delight after being stuck in the dark for what seemed like eternity. I had no sooner been laid down in my bunk than one of the men bought me something to drink. It was a healing tincture that Mr. Riak had prepared. "Lie still, and you'll soon be well again," Mr. Riak said. None of my bones were broken, and the fever soon went down. It took a few days of being a prisoner in my bunk, but I was soon well again. As I lay in bed, I got to know the sailors on the ship. They still looked more like pirates than traders to me. They were all rough and bad men, but they had their virtues that made me feel guilty for my first judgments of them. They were kind and simple, even beyond the simplicity of a country lad like me, and had some leanings towards honesty. They even gave me back my money, which they had taken when I became their prisoner. They told me that my uncle had intended to have me sold into slavery in the Carolinas, though now that fate was not so certain. One night the captain came to the forecastle and told me that I was the new cabin boy. Ransom had been killed, and his body was thrown over the side of the ship into the sea. My berth was moved from the forecastle to the roundhouse, where the captain, Mr. Riak, and Mr. Sean slept. It was Mr. Sean that had killed Ransom, and he was sitting in the roundhouse looking miserable. Mr. Riak and the captain followed me and began to shout at the drunken sailor. Then the captain took Mr. Sean by the shoulder and put him to bed, where Mr. Sean cried a lot before falling asleep. "You should have stopped him hurting that boy long ago, but it's too late now," Mr. Riak said to the captain. "No one is going to find out that Mr. Sean killed the boy. Everyone would be told that he went over the side of the ship in the night and was lost at sea. Understood?" the captain said. The next day, I was working on the ship. I had to get meals for the three men I slept in the roundhouse with and spent the whole day running between them, taking them something to drink. It was not easy work, but I soon learned what was expected of me. Mr. Riak and the captain were both kind to me, but Mr. Sean seemed to have lost his mind. Any time he seemed close to remembering Ransom, he would get drunk and forget him all over again. Even with working as the cabin boy, I still didn't know what would happen to me when we reached the Carolinas. One night, the ship sailed into a bank of fog. It shuddered and suffered a great crack. The sailors all came running, shouting that we must have run aground. But in truth, we had run over a boat. The sailors leaned over the side of the ship and saw that there was only one man that had survived. A boat was launched to rescue him and bring him onto the ship. The survivor was a Jacobite that wore the coat of a French soldier. He was wary of the captain, especially when Hoseason challenged the Jacobite about why he was in a small boat in the fog. I was sent to make dinner for the man, but when I came back to the roundhouse, the two men were talking business. The captain had gold in his hand and was just saying, "Half of it, and I'm your man. I've told you that the money belongs to my chieftain. He'll give you £30 to take me and carry me, and 60 if you sail me to the Linhi Lock. Take it or leave it," the Jacobite said. "What if I give you soldiers?" the captain asked. "You make a fool's bargain. My chieftain's lands are in the hands of King George, and his officers tried to collect the rents. But the people take their rents to my chieftain, and King George is now looking for his money," the Jacobite said. "Then I will do it for 60 guineas, the captain agreed. The two men shook hands, and the captain hurried out of the roundhouse, leaving me alone with the Jacobite. I had been brought up as a Whigamore, a Scotsman loyal to King George and the enemy of the Jacobites. I gave him his food and went to fetch the key to the rum from the captain. "Can't we trick him into leaving the roundhouse?" Mr. Riak asked the captain. "No, he's better where he is. There's no room for him to use his sword in there," the captain replied. "Well, that's true, but he's hard to come at," Mr. Riak said. "We can start him talking, then pin his arms on both sides and have him captured before he has a chance to draw his sword," the captain schemed. As soon as I heard this, I was scared by the treacherous men I was sailing with. My first thought was to try to run away, but then I had a better thought. "Captain, the Jacobite would like some rum. Can I have the key?" I asked. Mr. Riak and the captain both turned to look at me. "This is our chance, David. Go and get the pistols and powder," Riak told me. "Yes, if you go and get what we need from the roundhouse and do it without the Jacobite noticing, then I might not sell you as a slave in the Carolinas, and you will get some of the gold the man has," the captain said with excitement. I told the captain and Mr. Riak that I would do what they wanted, but I wasn't sure what the best thing to do was. Captain Hoseason and his men were dogs and thieves. They had kidnapped me, murdered poor Ransom, and now they were going to murder the Jacobite. But if I didn't help them, then I was going to die, either on the ship or as a slave in the Carolinas. What could a boy or man do, even if he was as brave as a lion, against a whole ship of men? I didn't know what I was going to do until I walked into the roundhouse and looked at the Jacobite eating his dinner by the light of a lantern. I walked over to him, placed my hand on his shoulder and said, "Do you want to be killed?" When he heard this, the Jacobite leapt to his feet and glared at me. "This ship is full of thieves and murderers. They've killed one boy already, and now they are going to kill you," I told him. "Well, they haven't got me yet. Will you stand and fight with me?" the Jacobite asked. "Of course I will. I'm not a thief, nor do I want to be a murderer. I will fight with you," I said. "What is your name?" he asked. "I am David Balfour of Shores. Who are you?" I replied, using the family title for the first time. It didn't occur to the Jacobite to doubt me, as it was commonplace to see the gentry of Scotland living in great poverty with no estate of his own. "My name is Stuart, but they call me Alan Breck. A king's name is good enough for me, but I have no other name to put on the end of it," the Jacobite replied. He meant that he didn't care whether I was of Shores or not. The roundhouse was a strong room that only had a skylight and two doors that were big enough for me to get through. The doors we could close and barricade to keep the men out. One of the doors was already closed, so I went to secure the other. "Wait, David, leave that door open. It's the best part of my defences," Alan said, as he stopped me. "As long as that door is open and I face it, The best part of our enemies will come through and be in front of me, just where I want them to be, he explained. We took weapons from the rack in the wall, a cutlass each and some pistols that Alan had me charge. While I loaded the pistols, Alan drew his sword and began to see how easy it was to fight in the small space of the roundhouse. My mouth was dry and my chest was tight as I worked. I thought about what would happen if we lost. I imagined that my body would be thrown into the sea and left there to rot and be eaten by sharks. Alan asked me about the crew of the ship, and I answered the questions as best as I could. Firstly, how many of them are there? Alan asked me. 15, I replied. Well, there's nothing we can do about that. Now, follow me. I will hold the door and fight the main battle. You are going to stand to this side and don't fire unless they knock me down. If they come through the skylight, then you can shoot them, he told me. I was not a great shot, and I told him so as his life might depend on me. Well, that is bravely said. There are many gentlemen that wouldn't have the courage to be so honest, he smiled at me. What happens if they break through the other door? I asked. If they try to break down the door, then you need to get to the window and shoot them. Remember to reload and charge your pistols once you've fired them, Alan explained. But if I am looking at the door, my back is to the skylight. If I look at the skylight, my back is to the door, I frowned. That is true, but you have eyes and ears. When you look at one, you can listen to what is going on at the other, Alan began. Of course, I will hear the glass breaking, I said, as I was hit by a moment of inspiration. Then get ready, they will come at us soon enough, Alan said grimly.